Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
With all that's happening in the world, I'm so thankful for the Great Courses Plus. What a fantastic resource for using this time to explore the larger world beyond our sometimes small one, our isolated one. The Great Courses Plus gives you stimuli for the mind, engages your thinking, teaching you all kinds of cool stuff on a huge host of subjects. Learn how to play the guitar. You can take a layman's course on physics. You can learn a foreign language, photography, brain science, astronomy. Take a skeptical journey through religious books like the Bible. Thousands of options for you. Speaking of religions, check out The Pagan World, Ancient Religions Before Christianity. It's taught by Dr. Hans Friedrich Müller, an expert on ancient religions and ancient literature. He gets into the Greek gods, these bizarre and often terrifying practices of the early pagans, early concepts of death and the afterlife, the politics involved with paganism, and how ancient beliefs have informed our modern-day religions, and that includes Christianity. I mean, it's really good stuff. Watch or listen anytime via the Great Courses app. You can stream to your TV, your computer, on your schedule. And you can keep the kids learning new stuff while they're out of school. There's never been a better time to start. The Great Courses Plus is giving my listeners a great offer, a free trial of unlimited access to their entire library. Sign up today using my special URL to get started. Start your free trial at thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. Remember, thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. Today's broadcast, I've called Disinfect Bad Ideas, because there are so many bad ideas out there. Kind of a stream of consciousness show, plus calls from our listeners as we talk about whatever's on your mind. Everybody's talking about COVID-19. Everybody's worn out. Everybody's tired of it. But how do you not talk about it? Because everybody's talking about it. I had to go to the store yesterday, and Natalie had, you know, weeks ago brought home one of those little medical masks. So I had to put on the medical mask and go in to the store. And it was weird because the first time I ever had to do it, I felt odd and weird and very self-conscious. And last night, I felt totally normal and protected and like not self-conscious. And I noticed almost everybody else in the store had one. Our new normal, right? Our new it's an odd analogy, but it reminds me of when Bluetooth earpieces first came out. And people were answering their phones and they were talking. It looked like they were talking to themselves. Like now it's so commonplace, it's hard to remember what it was like back in the day when you'd see somebody and they're like, blah, 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 blah. And they're saying something, talking to somebody in an earpiece, but you couldn't necessarily quite see the earpiece. Maybe their head was turned the other way. And it was just like, what the? And then it was weird seeing this thing sticking out of their ear at the time. And now it's just normal. Now you don't even blink. The new normal. What else? Oh, I'm getting feedback on the open letter to Pastor Greg Locke. If you didn't see this, it was last week. I released it to YouTube. I just woke up cranky. I just had enough. You ever feel that way? I'm sick of it. I've had enough. I'm watching these guys, this sort of God and liberty crowd who think that the instructions to quarantine or shelter in place or to social distance to try to keep people from dying during a global pandemic. They have seen this as an encroachment, an attack on their personal religion, right? They're trying to take away our freedom. They're screaming freedom as they wave the flags, honk their horns, and carry their protest signs. I couldn't take it anymore. I was just cranky. So I opened up the microphone. I turned on the camera. And I did like a 7-minute open letter to this guy who was participating in a protest in Tennessee. Pastor Greg Locke has a long history. Like, he's a book burner and he discriminates against LGBT people in the name of his Bible. And he's just an awful person. And you know what? Let me play the audio. I mean, the audio translates just fine. I'll play it for you here. An open letter to Pastor Greg Locke with the alternate title, Seth Woke Up Cranky. Okay, here we go. This is an open letter to Pastor Greg Locke of Global Vision Bible Church in Juliet, Tennessee. Now, I normally don't give extra attention to attention seekers, but I think there may be some utility in drawing attention to your example. Don't get excited. It's not a compliment. I saw your protest video on Twitter, you know, the one where you're out there at the demonstration, joining at the human petri dish in violation of state instructions for shelter in place. The hard right has long been predictably batshit about this kind of stuff. You know, other citizens of America and the world, they get it. They get the concept of abiding by a social contract that helps protect their fellow human beings during a global pandemic. And your first instinct is, of course, to knee-jerk into oblivion, grab a flag, crank up some Lee Greenwood, and join the right wing nuts who are boasting that they're prepared to die for their American right to die. By the way, I just love the camera pan of the crowd. You know, the shot where you stick your own face in the frame the whole time. And I think this actually reveals what your little protest video was really about. I mean, you can bloviate about freedom and liberty and God and Greenwood all you want. The rest of us are on to you. We are well aware you are engaging in an act of self-gratification. You are theologically and patriotically masturbating. And you should never masturbate in public. Normally, the rest of us would see your little antics and we do what we always do. We kind of shrug and move on, right? You are what you are. It's kind of sad, but fine. For years, you've been a walking, talking self-refutation anyway. You sell acceptance in Jesus while rejecting whole swaths of your fellow human beings, atheists, non-Christians, LGBT people. Oh, you love to sound the warnings about gay people. As if non-heterosexuality isn't perfectly natural and observable in hundreds upon hundreds of species throughout the animal kingdom. Certainly no threat to you or your personal belief system. Greg, man, if gay marriage is a threat to your marriage, then either you or your spouse is gay. Anyway, normally I just let it go. We would just let it go. We'd let you join all the others out there, you know, these truck-honking Duck Dynasty viewers, you know, when they're not out there opening beer cans with their teeth, they can boot-scoot their hometowns and hold up their misspelled protest signs all they want. The problem is all of this public and literal mouth-breathing, it's making the country a more dangerous place. You remind me a little bit of Evangelist Kenneth Copeland, like the guy who talks to the virus, a contagion spread through the discharge of the mouth and nose. And he thinks he can kill it by spitting. I mean, you're out there spitting pretty much.
COVID-19!
COVID-19!
I blow the wind of God.
The wind of God.
On you.
I used to be empathetic to this stuff. I used to be a Christian. And I get it. Many believers are good people. And if you want to believe personally, fine. You want to believe in a book that says that you're the descendant of a dirt man and a rib woman in a garden. A book that's got talking animals and blood magic and penguins boarding an ark in the desert and a woman impregnated by a ghost so a super baby can grow up and save everybody from his own perfect plan. You want to believe that stuff? Knock yourself out. If you want to sit around your own little pod and breathe on everybody, fine. But when you throw yourself out into the public, you then become a problem for the rest of us. You're a potential infection point for everybody you meet. And if you guys were a closed system, we'd just let you sit around and knock each other out of the gene pool. But COVID-19 is highly contagious. We got people who have to get out into public, into the mix, into your potential zone. Certainly our healthcare workers, people who are going to be forced to deal with these neuron-free corona victims who picked up the virus inside one of your little MAGA circle jerks. That means you're taking up valuable time and resources that we need for other things. You're also an infection point for people who just need to get out and buy groceries and get basic necessities. Not just them. You're endangering their spouses, their kids, anybody in their house, anybody they might bump into along the way. I don't know if there's language to express how myopic and selfish you are being. Nobody's saying we're not hugely grieved about the economic consequences of this lockdown. But most Americans still get it. Statistically, they support social distancing and the shutdown of major potential infection points because we are not prepared for this novel virus, because people are dying, because we care about human life. Hell, many of the people who've recovered are permanently damaged. We've had amputees, lung damage, and heart damage, and much more, stuff we may not know about yet. Your liberties are not under attack. You're not under personal attack. You still get to be an American. It ain't about you. For once, Pastor Locke, it ain't about you. So get over yourself. All of you, you and the rest of these flag-waving, gun-toting, so-called freedom fighters, getting off on themselves. You are not helping. You're actually hurting the country that you profess to love. You're potentially hurting or killing your fellow human beings. Go bang your Bible inside your own house or in your little country church. You can make your videos telling the rest of us how wrong we are and how correct you are in the Bible. You can build your bigotry in a free speech culture that protects that stuff. It still allows you to have your tragic opinions. And while you're doing that, stay the hell away from the rest of us. You are a public safety hazard, all of you. And while the rest of the world is playing by the rules and empathizing and understanding and doing what's necessary until this is all over so that it can be over, you are nothing more than a cautionary tale, an example of the worst thing to do. And the truth is, if the best incarnation of Jesus was alive and here and watching all of this, that Jesus would tell you to get your ass home and shut your mouth. For the sake of the rest of us, for the sake of the rest of his fragile, precious children. Why did I do the video? Because I'm tired. I'm tired of being nice. I'm a nice guy. You ever just feel that way? I'm tired of being nice about it. I just had to blow off some steam. I mean, I'm better. I'm all better now. I'm all balanced, right? The volcano has erupted. The pressure has been released. I feel much better. I understand the tremendous devastation being wrought on people in business. I am wired in with people who are risk losing everything. They are desperate to work. They have invested their whole lives, their savings, decades into building a business, running a business. They have employees who have families to feed. They have responsibilities. They're on the bubble. They may not survive. They may be financially destroyed for the rest of their lives. I'm not at all insensitive to that. And so, you know, I resist a little bit this narrative out there that, well, you know, the protesters simply want to open the country back up so they can go get their nails and hair done. There's a few of those people, yeah. I've seen a few of those people. My roots are showing. You know, or I'm ready to go sit down at a restaurant, talk to my people. I understand the inclination to want to go and hang out. But a lot of these people are desperate to reintegrate because they may never recover. And I think it's dishonest to ignore that. But a lot of what I am seeing and what I resist and the motivation behind the Greg Locke video was not trying to empathize with people who want to reintegrate despite the dangers. Like they themselves are willing to take the risk and blah, blah, blah. We can get into that. But they consider it some sort of an evil attack on the Constitution. My liberties, my freedom. They grab their flags and they go and they just self-gratify. I'm so tired of people who are religiously free, religiously privileged, bitching and moaning about how persecuted they are. I just couldn't take it anymore. I'm just like, dear Pastor Locke, what is wrong with you? I just had to get it off my chest. I'm really not that guy. I guess I was that guy. Anyway, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. What else have I been amused by? Oh, I like this one. A mock-up of a Facebook notification that's been making the rounds. Marked safe from injecting disinfectant today. What kind of world are we living in? What kind of world do we live in when the CDC has to issue a warning? Please, everyone, don't inject disinfectant into your bodies. This part of me just thinks, let these people filter themselves out of the gene pool. The collective IQ of humanity goes up. It's a net gain. The problem is that this kind of stupid is not a closed system. It just ripples outward. In a perfect world, they would be in their little closed systems, right? Their little pods, and they would inject disinfectant, and they remove themselves from the human equation, and the rest of us sort of scratch our heads and go, well, that's weird, and we get on with our lives. But these people influence people in their own circle. They teach this stuff to their kids. Hey, little Timmy, guess what I saw on the internet? Here's some Clorox, right? It infects other people. They're then sharing misinformation on social media, influencing their people. This is a bad idea. That's like a virus. It infects other people who might be susceptible, vulnerable to bad ideas. It affects the people that they support who are quote unquote leaders, whether it's local, regional, states, federal governments. So those are influencers in their own circle who are empowered by the ignorance, the tragic ignorance of their constituents. In a perfect world, why don't you just let people believe what they want to believe? Yeah, it sounds great. It fits great on a bumper sticker, but it's not the real world because beliefs inform actions. This shit affects the rest of us. We pay for your high level, your Olympic level of stupid. Where's that article? I think I saved it for you. Hang on. Yes. Okay. This is in Newsweek. Maryland governor says state received hundreds of calls asking if it's okay to ingest Clorox after Trump's disinfectant remarks. Okay, hang on. No, let's read some of this. Let's read along together. Maryland's Governor Larry Hogan, a Republican, commented on Sunday of a wrong message being sent following President Donald Trump's controversial remarks about disinfectants and the coronavirus last week, pointing out that his state had received, quote, hundreds of calls from residents wondering if it was safe to ingest cleaning products. During a Thursday press conference, Trump questioned whether it would be possible to inject disinfectants into the human body to combat, is it combat or combat, the novel coronavirus. Health experts and companies making cleaning products, as well as many elected officials, quickly warned the public against attempting to inject or ingest disinfectants, as such actions could lead to serious illness and possible death. The president later claimed the remark was sarcastic and has since shared advice via Twitter from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that warned against using disinfectants in such a manner. This is such a bullshit excuse, by the way. We all saw the press conference. He was like, hey, what are you doing? And he's looking right at his health advisor. I wasn't talking to her. I was talking to the media, just being sarcastic. Let's dissect this for just a second. Okay. If he was being legitimate and sincere, he is terrifying. The man's terrifying. Terrifying ignorance. This is the same guy who asked if we could drop a nuke into hurricanes. Drop a nuclear weapon into a hurricane. Okay. It's the same guy. All right. That's either true, this sort of terrifying ignorance, or if he's being sarcastic, during a global pandemic, he is trolling members of the media from his position as president of the United States. That is evil. That's evil. People all over the, not just the country, all over the world are listening, and he decides to what? I'm going to troll the media. I'm going to be sarcastic. Got to see what they do. Ha, 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 ha. Jab, jab, jab. Hey, I'm sorry. What? Evil. That would be evil. There's no excuse for it. I see a question here in the chat. Ian has asked, as an atheist, what is evil to you? This is an interesting question. I like the word evil. I don't believe in a supernatural definition of evil, and that's the difference. I sort of prescribe evil, meaning that if you do something that is tremendously awful, horrible, damaging, destructive, that is something we can describe as evil. But it's not the product of an underlying supernatural evil force. It's not being informed by this sort of sinister membrane of spiritual energy or a devil in the dark. But I like the word evil to describe people doing tremendously horrible things. You can look and say, that's just an evil thing. Child abuse, just an evil act done by an evil person. You can say that. So, you know, language is fluid a little bit, but I don't subscribe to the supernatural version of evil. You know, there's evil out there in the world. The evil one has come to steal, kill, and destroy. That kind of thing? No, I don't believe in that. Saw an interesting cartoon about the coronavirus on the internet. It shows three priests representing three different religions and a fourth guy who's a scientist. And the priests are all praying and holding up their symbols to defeat COVID-19, and the virus is unaffected. And the scientist is spraying some sort of, you know, science-based concoction on the virus, and it begins to disintegrate. And I think that's an interesting commentary about the impotence of these religious prayers against this pandemic, while science is going to be the one that does all the work and likely doesn't get nearly enough of the credit. Everybody's going to claim that God did it. He just took his sweet time, right? When was the National Day of Prayer, anyway, for COVID? When was that? Mid-March? Lord, we ask that you protect us from the COVID. And then the cases go. This is a referendum on the power of prayer. Well, you know, people get comfort. Oh, no. Shh. When you pray, do you expect prayer to work? Well, yeah. I mean, does the Bible say that whatever you ask in my name, does the Bible promise you answered? Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Power prayer. Move mountains. Amen. Mm-hmm. All right. Did you pray against the virus? Oh, yeah. We prayed. We all got together, church group, or we were online, or, you know, we as a family. We all prayed. We joined together. Okay. Have you seen the statistics? Can you explain that? Well, you know, God is mysterious. What? His ways are not our ways. He works in mysterious ways. We mere insects, we can't understand. Back here. Let's go back. Do you believe prayer works? Oh, yeah. Did you pray against COVID-19? Yeah. Is COVID-19 still around? Does this give you pause at all about the power of prayer? No way. Mm-mm. Prayer works. What? So then the equivocations begin. Well, you know, it may not happen now. Maybe God's going to use the vaccine. Okay. It's a sinful world. So the power of prayer bounces against the wall of separation, which sin has put between us and our deity. So prayer doesn't work. Oh, yeah, it works. It works, except that it hits the, there's sin. It's a fallen, it hits the, there's a, so God can't penetrate the wall for his obedient prayer warrior. But no, God can, he's nothing inhibits God. The wall is, he can't because of sin. How can an omnipotent God be restrained by the word can't? Well, he can, but he, all right, so now we're getting down to it. He either won't or he doesn't exist, right? He either can't, won't, or doesn't exist. This is a referendum on the power of prayer. Now, you're right in the chat. God is apparently what he's busy making rainbows and finding parking spaces and lost car keys and shit like that, but he can't be bothered to rescue us from a global pandemic because of sin. Well, he can, but he won't. Why won't he? Because of sin. Wait a minute. Oh, it's frustrating. How else you dealing with the quarantine? I saw another internet meme. Got a stack of boxes sitting in front of somebody's front door with a caption, a definition, really. Primenesia. When you order so much Amazon Prime that you don't know what's in the box. Now, we're, of course, ordering a lot of stuff on Amazon because we're not supposed to be going to the stores. And so, you know, she's like reorganizing the pantry. And she wants to put, I don't know, Natalie's like, I'm like, just throw some shit on the shelf. We talked about this the other day at our 500th broadcast. I'm built for speed. Just throw it on the shelf. It's all right. Well, you know, put it in some semblance of order so I can kind of see where it goes. And that go grab it and I'm good. She's like, no. Let's get a container. Let's buy it in a container. And then we'll have a container that you then transfer it into. So you take one container of spices, but we have a glass container that's got a beautiful little label on it that's transparent that she custom ordered. And then you take the one container and you put it in the other container. Now, so now it's in the nicer container and it looks lovely. She's been reorganizing all of that stuff. But, you know, we get these little boxes in the mail. She can't even remember which order is what. I've done it too. I've done it, a primenesia. Short break. Gonna hand things over to our callers. I've had enough ranting time. Let's see what you have to say on whatever subject comes to your mind. We'll go to the switchboard right after this. Casual broadcast to kick off the month of May. Just rants from your host, monologuing about whatever and calls on any subject. As we go to the switchboard and see what our listeners have to talk about. 423, hi.
Hi, this is Crystal in Missouri.
How are you holding up? I mean, you dealing?
For the most part. I mean, I stay home and work from home most of the time anyway, so it's not that big of a change for me, but not being able to get out and see friends and stuff, it kind of sucks.
We see people in our neighborhood, and they're putting their outdoor lawn chairs 6-7 feet apart, and they're spacing themselves out, but they're so desperate for social interaction. I mean, I get that, right? I miss people.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
So what else is on your mind? What are you doing?
Well, I wanted to talk to you, and I apologize for making your show a little heavy so early, but I wanted to talk to you about the idea of forgiveness in the secular sense. I am non-religious. I grew up in the church and Christian, like fundamentalist Baptist church and all that, and got out of it probably 5 or 6 years ago. And basically, without giving you my entire backstory here, my biological dad was never really a great dad. So I completely cut him out of my life shortly after realizing that I didn't have to have him in my life, you know, and that I'm actually in control of my choices and who's here and who's not, you know, and that I didn't have a God to, you know, answer to for that. But now my religious family is saying, well, you should just forgive him, you know, you should allow him back into your life. And part of me says, well, I miss that father-daughter relationship, whatever small tethers we did have. And then another part of me says, why would I do that to myself? You know, because it was a toxic relationship for me. I mean, he didn't beat me or anything like that, but you know, just the relationship we had was not healthy. So, I mean, like, what, I guess my question would be like, how do you feel about the idea of forgiveness in that sense? You know,
You know, I'm not an expert, right? I mean, I'm just going to be a brother right now, right? We're just talking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right, and that's what I need.
There are a lot of people.
I don't have a lot of atheist friends here.
they're smarter than I am about stuff like this. And they, you know, they can speak to relationship counseling in a more thorough, more clinical sense. But, I mean, you and I can just talk like real people.
Yeah.
Natalie wouldn't mind me telling you this. Her father was a toxic man who left mm-hmm. when she was very young. And she was raised by her stepfather, who was essentially dad, right? He was all the things that a father was supposed to be. Her bio dad, right? The sperm donor dad was abusive and just a horrible human being. And later in his life, he began to, I think, in his way, have regret about the fact that he'd abandoned his family and he'd been so awful. You know, his machine for processing that stuff was not very good. And he started to tap on the door to try to get back into Natalie's life to have some kind of relationship. And she chose to open the door and let him back in. And try to have some catharsis, try to have some reconnection, as good as it could be. I mean, they were never hugely close. But I remember he was on his deathbed. He was in hospice at his house, really, is what happened. And he knew he was dying. You know, they weren't a close couple. But they had, in those moments, sort of that last moment of touch and connection and whatnot. That was possible for her, okay? But I don't know if it's possible for everybody. It's going to, I think, have to be really more about you than it is about him. If you decide that you would like to open the door and allow this person to come in and perhaps begin to earn trust again, if that's possible, and you can have a relationship of some kind. If you are comfortable with that, I think that's probably the starting point. I mean, may I ask, have they changed? Has he changed? Is he still a toxic person? Is he going to bring any good into your circle? Or is this mostly about, well, he's your bio dad and it's the right thing to do kind of deal?
Yeah. I mean, he seems to have changed some. My sisters say he's, you know, trying, and that he's actually trying to spend time with them and their families, and which is more than he ever did for me.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you owe him anything. I mean, I was talking to Tracy Harris about the time when she said her father had died. And I said, well, I'm very sorry. And she's like, well, I'm not. I mean, she's very frank about it. And it kind of jarred me. like, you know, I'm not used to that kind of language. And she's like, you know, it's okay mm-hmm. to acknowledge that there are some people who are a net loss for the goodness of humanity. I'm not saying that we want them to die. I'm saying that there are some people who, when they enter the room, it's not a better place. It's just a net loss. Things are just not as good. They are not bringing goodness to the people that they touch in their lives. If that's the case for you, or if there's too much scarring and damage, I say protect yourself. You don't owe him anything because he is your bio dad. And if you do come to a point when you're like, you know, maybe we can salvage something, and maybe that would bring a benefit in some way to my life. It might make me feel better. Maybe he's genuinely on a path toward trying to fix what he broke in the best way he can. And so I'm willing to extend a little bit of an olive branch his way. I mean, fine. But I really feel like it needs to be, this journey, it's selfish, but I think you need to be selfish in this regard. I think you need to protect yourself and make this decision about you. So don't let other people sort of emotionally blackmail you into cracking that door open that he essentially slammed shut in the first place. That's not on you. That's just one guy's advice. Does that help at all? I don't know.
It does, actually. And I guess, you know, it's all stuff that I kind of knew, but it's good to hear from someone else, you know?
It's like family's hard, isn't it? You know, you and I were raised in a culture
right
where it's like, I hear they say it this way to me. They're like, well, you know, come on, they're your parents, so you have to put up with it. And at one point, I remember looking around going, who wrote that rule? They're old now, and they're set in their ways, and this is just how they're going to be. And if they're awful, well, the rest of us just have to sort of abide. Well, why do I have to abide it? Who wrote that particular rule? I think that's a good question, you know? And so you and I come from that culture where they're like, well, defer to your elders. And I'm sort of in that mindset where, you know, respect is important, but respect really kind of needs to be earned, doesn't it? Especially in the adult
Absolutely.
World. So, I'm sorry that, you know, your father was not there for you. I know that sucks. I hope you had someone, you know, someone to help fill the gap.
I did. That's a different story for a different day. But we did growing up have someone else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I think my advice for what it's worth to you would be don't do it because somebody else is nudging you. Do it because you have come to the point where you're willing. And I think those are baby steps. I don't think you open the door all the way. I think crack it open. Let's see how we do. Let's see if trust is, you know, if the rebuilding of trust begins to happen. Are they acting in good faith? Are they genuinely bringing something good? Are they trying? That's huge. If somebody is genuinely wanting to be better, because I'm all about second chances. We've all screwed up in our lives and we want to have a second chance. You know, what's that line? There's the life you learn with and the life you live with after that. Some people make a monster mistake and they just want a second chance. But I think, you know, that's, you'd get to decide the boundaries. And if you're not ready, that's an easy one. You know, your life moves on. You surround yourself with support and people who get you and love you for who you are and who didn't screw you over and wonderful. And if that ever changes, that's your decision to make. Okay.
All right. Thanks so much, Seth. I appreciate you talking to me today.
Big hug from a brother. Okay. It's going to be all right. You hang in there.
Thank you.
See you later. I always get a little nervous, you know, when people ask me about relationship advice. I'm not a relationship counselor, but, you know, I'm a friend. Well, we'll call it that. So if people want to ask, you know, hey, what do you think as a friend? I always throw the caveat out like, I'm not Yoda, but I mean, I'm like any of you. My opinion is not more valuable than anybody in the chat or anybody else who's in part of the community. I think it's just one guy's perspective. 814, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
What's going on, Seth? This is the grumpy old dude in Pennsylvania.
Well, what are you grumpy about these days?
Oh, well, that's my little catch line, AKA. I'm the only real G.O.D. that can be proven. But anyway.
All right. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about?
Earlier, you were talking about, you know, why shouldn't we just let them believe, you know, let people believe whatever they want to believe. Well, there can be some major issues with that just besides regular Christianity. I kind of focused a lot of my time going after hate groups and trying to let people know, hey, beliefs can lead to some pretty horrible things. And, you know, I do that because I used to be a white supremacist, and now I'm kind of speaking out against that and letting people know, hey, you can't just let everybody believe everything they want to believe. Sometimes, well, more often than not, religion can be absolutely horrendous.
What changed your mind? I mean, you were a white supremacist, and now you're looking through the looking glass the other way. That's a story worth telling. What? I mean, if you're okay with telling it, what happened?
Sure. Science and history and actual education. The group I used to belong to was the World Church of the Creator, run by Matthew Hale. And they basically believe that the white race is their religion. They are the only, as far as I know anyway, they're the only atheist religion. You know, they do not believe in any god or gods or devils or demons or anything like that. But they believe that their race, the white race, is their religion. And they are, I mean, I guess you could consider them a kind of a terrorist group. You know, they have committed several very violent acts.
And you got into, like, science and reason, the science of what we are all genetically pretty much the same, right? We're all the human condition. Is that what happened?
When I joined this group, I was very, very young. I was 20 years old and going through some stuff at the time. I was incarcerated at the time for, you know, a crime that I later had overturned, and it took me 12 and a half years to get it overturned. But thankfully that happened. But when they first approached me, I didn't have, you know, the kind of education I have now. You know, like, I mean, I had a good education, don't get me wrong. I graduated high school and everything else, but I didn't know a whole lot about, you know, like ancient history and evolution and actual science. I mean, I just had the basic, you know, public school education. Now, I do have a question for you, though. Do you think that Trump's whole religious right thing is actually opening up doors for a lot of these white supremacist groups?
I think they feel empowered. Who was the commentator online that said, even if Trump himself is not a white supremacist, the white supremacists think he's a white supremacist, which is why he's getting endorsements and all of these racist publications. He has not done really anything to separate himself, to condemn, to denounce. And there is a very much an us versus them, sort of a xenophobic temperature to what he does, right? It's us versus them. The immigrant is an easy one. The Muslim is the Democrat, the media. It's always us versus them.
Yeah.
I write about this in the book that I have coming out in June. It's called Confessions of a Former Fox News Christian. And we talk about there's a sect of conservative people, and not all conservatives. So don't flip out, people. But statistically, it has been revealed that conservatives are often, many conservatives are often attracted to more of a nationalist mindset. They're more afraid of the unknown. They're more afraid of foreigners. They're more afraid of germs. They are more afraid of change. And
yes.
So that attracts a culture. They come together then because it is a protective pod. And then they, as the group, start to look out at all the other, and it becomes a, you know, an us versus them narrative. That explains a lot of these militia groups, white supremacist groups, a lot of these pods, a lot of the organizations and religion that position themselves with family in their title. You know, they're promoting the family. Everybody else is anti-family. Right. So I really think a lot of these cultures are empowered by this build the wall vibe that's being thrown off in Trumpistan. They respond to it because they're scared, and this makes them feel safe. And there's a lot of interesting brain science behind a lot of this. Hector Garcia just posted an article recently from the Pew Research that revealed, even regarding COVID-19, how you're seeing people who are this particular sect of conservative who are less resistant to science, distrustful of scientists, and more kind of worried about the foreigner and other things than they are about the actual virus itself. You know, you can probably speak to that better than me, right? Weren't you part of an insular pod? It was you versus the world, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yep, pretty much. It was, you know, if they're not white, then we need to eradicate them, get rid of them, because we need to reconquer the earth for our own. And one thing that I've come across lately that kind of boggles my mind, I can't wrap my brain around this. I've been looking into these offshoot churches from an older church founded by Herbert W. Armstrong.
Oh.
And they're all different churches of God. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. There are different churches of God, like the Restored Church of God and the Living Church of God. Now, they claim they're not racist. You know, they have members from all over the world and all different colors and races. But they don't want you to marry outside of your race. You can come and be part of their congregation. Just stay with your own kind.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? And people give you money for that?
It's the sort of a spin on whenever somebody does this, whenever they start a sentence with, I'm not a racist, but prepare yourself because there's probably a racist statement that's going to follow that caveat.
Yes. And Richard Williams just put in the chat, The World Tomorrow. And yes. And the other one, Tomorrow's World, all over Facebook. I mean, I can't believe that they have, you know, people of color in their congregations, and they're like, yeah, okay, I'll only marry somebody who's black because I'm black, and, you know, I'm going to pay you for teaching me this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand that.
I know. And, you know, it's one of my favorite social experiments has been when they take some of these white supremacists and they get them to take a DNA test, and they are revealed to have to not be pure Aryan or whatever they get to, but they actually have all these other races in them, and they just totally are nonplussed. They totally just vapor lock that, you know, like tilt. So, well, I'm glad you're out, man. I'm glad you
best one.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
One of the best ones I ever saw. I was in New Jersey. That's where I'm originally from. And we had this guy. He was a member of the creativity movement for, like, I don't know, 10 years. You know, he's this hardcore skinhead, tattoos everywhere. And then his mother introduced him to his biological father, who was Puerto Rican.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I'm glad you're out. I'm glad to know that there is a God that exists, grumpy old dude. So thank you so much for that.
There you go. Thank you.
Be safe out there. Thanks for being a part of the show today. Okay.
All right. You too, brother. Yeah. Take care.
See you later. There's a beautiful documentary on Netflix called White Right. journalist Dia Khan, Muslim, okay, takes a film camera, a video camera, into the living rooms of various white supremacists. And these are hardcore guys, like dangerous guys, I think. Hardcore, hate-filled, racist white supremacist people. And instead of going and screaming across the street, you know, whatever, we often see the protesters and they're all just screaming, 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 screaming. She decided to just go into their living rooms by imitation. She got them to say yes. And she sits down 5 feet from them. And she just talks. Do you think I'm not a person? Do you feel like I'm not a human being? Am I not as much a human being as you are? Do you really want to see my family deported? Do you want to see me removed from this country? Do you feel like I deserve to die? And you see the white supremacist, right? They're prepared for the protest. They're prepared for the screaming and the placards and the protest signs and the Confederate flags and all everybody screaming because they're ready for battle, right? This is a reinforcing effect, the backfire effect. They are, the more they're contested, the more they're shouted down, the more they feel persecuted, the more that makes them empowered as being on the side of righteousness. They are David versus Goliath, so they double down and they shout even louder, and it's a vicious cycle and things get horrible. No, but this is not happening. Now there's a single human being right in front of them in their living room going, let's just talk for a second. Do you think I'm not a human being? There are a few of these white supremacists who just shut down, tilt. They could not deal with it. That one of them stopped the interview. I can't, you know what? I can't do this. Because they weren't confronted with the image, the cardboard cutout, the statistic. They saw a human being. And several of the people who sat in front of that camera and had these conversations contacted her months after the fact and said, I just need you to know, once I got to know you, I realized I could not be in this group anymore. And they left white supremacy. They left the hate group outright. There's an interesting commentary here about how minds are changed. There's a lot of, and I understand this, a lot of talk about they'll never be reasoned with. All you can do is crush them. And I get it. I mean, I understand this sentiment. I understand it. I feel like Pastor Greg Locke video. Do I think Pastor Greg Locke is totally incapable of ever being brought into reason? I mean, anything's possible. Anything's possible. We've seen people who were agents of hugely bad ideas and hate and all these other things, who had a sea change in their lives, something happened and they realized, and then they spent the rest of their lives making up for it. And again, I'm all about second chances. So never say never. But I understand the reality that a lot of people are doing so much damage and are not listening. They're only shouting. It feels like we'll never get through. And so then the tactic for us becomes, well, we're just going to have to just push him out of the forefront. We've got to eliminate him. We got to stick him in the fringes. We got to get him out of the way so that the rest of the world, you know, and there are some people I think who will never be Donald Trump. Well, he'll never have that moment of epiphany where he says, you know what? I've been an asshole to everybody and I don't know everything. And I want to help other people, and I want to see the rising tide raise all ships, and I want to be compassionate, and I want to be a humanist. He'll never get there. I'm not naive enough to think that he'll ever get there. But I also don't want to be the guy who gives up because I was reasoned out of a bad idea. I was reasoned out of an unreasonable faith. This is why I hate that meme that says, you can never reason someone out of a position they weren't reasoned into to begin with. They say this about Christians. That is such bullshit. I was reasoned out of an unreasonable position. I'm a living refutation to that claim. Dia Khan sat in front of skinhead, hate-filled white supremacists and talked them out of their hate. Extreme examples, yeah, but examples? I struggle with it. I struggle sometimes with, sometimes I just want to say, fuck it. I'm tired of being nice. I'm tired. I'm weary. I'm exhausted. And I just have to stop and try to temper myself and be like, you will not insult them out of leaving a bad idea. You will not persecute them out of leaving a bad idea. You will not shout them down out of, at some point we have to defeat bad ideas with better ideas. And we have to create opportunities where we are not shouting at each other from across the street holding our banners, but we are getting together and humanizing each other. I know it's utopian. I know it's often not possible. I know it's a pie in the sky kind of Pollyanna way of looking at it in many instances. I know. I hear you. I hear your protestations. But I think it's a preferable perspective than just writing off whole swaths of the population, because then you're only reinforcing their persecution narrative and they remain ignorant. And, you know, as unpopular as it is to say, they are victims. Many of these people are victims of bad ideas. They're brainwashed. A lot of them raised in these sort of religious pods, white supremacist pods as children. This was their normal. They didn't know anything else. They didn't have any other ideas. They never met any other people. They were victims. And so when you see them as victims and not just the enemy, then you have an opportunity to humanize them. And that is where and when conversations begin. I was talked out of a bad idea. My caller talked. He was talked out of a bad idea. Nobody beat him with a baseball bat. Education. Humanization. One or two more. 925. You're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
Hi, it's Rosemary from Haywood. How are you, Seth?
I'm so good. I'm doing well. I am good. We'll say it that way. Thanks for asking, Rosemary. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm sitting here like most people, alone, except that I'm very lucky. I have a family. So I have a husband and a son who are here with me that I get on pretty well with. All atheists. That helps.
Yeah.
I have a lovely picture window I can look at it at, hills and trees and birds and squirrels and stuff. So I'm luckier than a lot of people. I wanted to comment on something earlier in the program. You were mentioning that you're not a trained therapist, and you're acting as a brother, which I thought was a lovely way of putting it. Oh. I am a trained therapist, but I appreciate very much people like you and the sort of things, the sort of help that you provide people. One of the things that I like to explain to people that I've trained as therapists is that one of the biggest things that helps with helping other people is empathy, and not everybody has it. You do. One of the research projects that has been done showed that of comparing the competence of counsellors rather than psychotherapists, and counsellors being people that are dealing with not really serious psychiatric problems, but the problems of everyday life, which is a lot of what you get, that the main criteria was whether the person who's talking to the other person is able to empathize with them. And untrained therapists who have high degrees of empathy do just as well as trained therapists in that area. So do not put yourself down.
Oh, wow.
You do well.
Oh, you're very kind. You're very kind. How are, in your opinion, how is this affecting all of us? Aren't we social creatures? And now we're forced to be antisocial in a lot of ways. I mean, as far as at least human touch and human interaction, you've been watching this and how does it play out?
Yeah, I think human touch is the thing that's most missing. And I'm one of the lucky ones is that I have people here that I can touch. The people I'm most concerned about are the people who live alone. I remember one of the research projects that I was involved with in my training years, a number of my colleagues and students, fellow students, were going around interviewing elderly people. And sometimes some of the comments that came back were heart-wrenching. People saying, look, can you just give me a hug? I haven't been able to touch anybody for years. And this is something that we forget about. We forget that touch is so necessary. I mean, babies who don't get enough touch don't thrive. People in special care nurseries understand this now, but in earlier years they didn't. They didn't understand why kids in orphanages didn't grow up so well. I've seen one particular 16-year-old who'd been abandoned by his parents and been put in the equivalent of orphanages these days. And he was emotionally immature and stunted in growth, behaved more like a 9-year-old than a 16-year-old. And the sad thing is that in Australia, where I was born, at 16, the state sends them out into the world as if they're old enough to cope. This kid was not emotionally old enough to cope. But you're looking at years of not enough physical love. You know, if we're going to add this into religion, one of the things that the gods don't do is provide physical touch.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting perspective, isn't it? They're always in the abstract.
Yes. They're supposed to be perfect, but they can't provide one of the necessary components of human thriving. Touch.
Yeah.
What gods hug you physically? Other than imaginative hugs, and sorry, but imaginative hugs don't work real well.
At the end of the day, we see a lot of the religious organizations and institutions, they have God as their window dressing then, but whenever they welcome somebody with open arms and they provide love and support and visit them in the hospitals and help them through addiction recovery, etc., we're really seeing humanism, aren't we? Human beings helping each other.
We are, yes. And that's irrespective of what religious or non-religious belief you have.
That's interesting. That's an interesting angle, isn't it? Our gods have always been in the abstract, have never once been able to embrace us in a meaningful touch and meaningful ways in that way. That's interesting.
Well, you know, the people who say that they have a relationship with God, and that the one that really got me from ex-friend, unfortunately, was that her experience of Jesus was more real than that of her husband. I thought, oh my God, I'm so sorry for...
For the husband?
You know? Yes! I mean, what
thanks, honey!
Husband's the one that you know, provides her with food if she's sick, tucks her in at night if she needs it, hugs her, you know, has a conversation with her that's two-way, not one-way.
Yeah.
Gods don't have two-way conversations. They don't tend to disagree with people. They tend to support whatever belief they have. I mean, and, of course, that belief's different depending on the person. So you get very contradictory gods, except that they don't contradict the particular personality.
I think that's a very salient point, too. Thanks for the encouraging words. I find myself apologizing all the time for my lack of qualifications. I'm a storyteller. I'm an encourager. That's usually what I say. You know, I'm a broadcaster, storyteller, encourager. But I always want to make sure that people don't think, well, Seth said it. Let's take it to the bank. I'm sure people are more critical thinking than that, but I'm paranoid. So
it's an important thing to say, Seth, and I'm glad that you do say it.
Okay.
Because that doesn't sit, if you get to something that is beyond what you know, and you have a pretty good range of what you know, then, like you said, that sets people up to realize that maybe you have gaps in your knowledge and you don't suffer from Dunning-Kruger effect in that instance.
But gaps in my knowledge, Rosemary.
Yeah, but you know them. Well, you know some of them anyway, and you know that you do have them.
I know that I don't
really
know.
Important. Yes. Yes. Well, that puts you in the range of people that are probably pretty smart.
I don't know. Well, we'll see. We'll see how the rest of my life plays out. I wish I could see through your pretty picture window. That sounds amazing. You sort of mentally, though, you took us on a journey with you. So we are all sort of envisioning what you're seeing, the vista outside through the glass. But you're a tremendous encouragement to me, Rosemary, and I sure appreciate you. And you guys hang in there up there or down there, okay?
You're very welcome, Seth.
All right, you take care.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye. Oh, I love the Australian accent. Oh, I just love it. If I could have any accent, like I love the British accent, but there's something about the Aussie accent that I could just listen to all day. All day. What is that? I don't know. I digress. That's it for today. Appreciate you so much. I hope you're staying safe. I know these are wild, weird, frustrating times, but we got each other. And that's something. So thank you for your encouragement to me and for listening and continuing to keep on keeping on. And I'll see you back here next time.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter for a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions. Log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.